some quarters.
KUCI in Irvine. Where for this next hour programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. Moving in now to Talking Animals, KUCI.
Sharks patrol these waters. Sharks patrol these waters. Don't let your fingers dangle in the water. And don't you worry about the Dayglow Orange Life Preserver. It won't save you. It won't save you. Swim for the shore just as fast as you are able. Swim like a motherfucker. Swim. That the scene shifts to now, the ever glorious now, the ever present now, dredged in flour and deep fat fried and cooled on paper towels and then devoured. You know, I spent 15 years in a life raft. 15 years in a life raft. Now I got something to say. Stay in your lifeboats, people. Stay in your lifeboats, people. It's murder out there, murder out there. Sharks patrol these waters. Sharks patrol these waters. Hey, don't you worry about the Dayglow Orange Life Preserver. It won't save you. It won't save you. Swim for the shores just as fast as you were able. Swim.
That's sort of like a strong cup of coffee, is it not? Well, maybe not. All right. But either way, that's music from Morphine with a song called Sharks. As we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals, the first one of 2004, Happy New Year, on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that's devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number and call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love to get calls here Talking Animals. Otherwise, we get a bit lonely. It's like the Maytag repairman. Anyway, other ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com and checking out our wonderful website at talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net, folks. Here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. It's been nearly 7 months since we launched Talking Animals, and we've been enormously fortunate during that time to have a long string of terrific guests, including Dr. Sophia Yin, a veterinarian who's done pioneering research on dog barks and what they mean, Ian Anderson, the singer-songwriter flute player behind rock band Jethro Tull, and something of an animal advocate and expert. Dan Matthews, who is vice president of communications at PETA, is the chief strategist of the organization's high-profile campaigns. We also had a freewheeling chat with Meryl Marco, the Emmy-winning television writer, author, and creator of Stupid Petrix on The Letterman Show nearly 25 years ago, and much, much more. And not only are all those interviews archived on our nifty website at www.talkinganimals.net, but our stream of exceptional guests continues today when we speak with author Barbara Davis, who's written a book called Dark Side of Debonair, The Bushmeat Trade, a novel intended to shine a broad spotlight on the bushmeat crisis, which, among other facets, involves the hunting and eating of wildlife species, including elephants, gorilla, chimpanzees, and other primates. While most rampant in Central African countries, the bushmeat crisis also exists in Asia, India, and South America, and it's a huge and complex problem with significant implications globally, so we look forward to discussing it with Barbara Davis when she joins us live on the phone a bit later in the program. Meanwhile, on Talking Animals, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items, but also any of your own comments, questions about anything else that's come up in the animal world, any topic you care to discuss, announcements, any event that you might want to bring to our attention, anything else. So that's all most welcome at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Starting off, as we typically do here on Talking Animals, with a mention or two of Tiger Rescue. That's the facility in Colton, California, sort of out by San Bernardino and Broad Strokes, where for many years a guy ran a so-called sanctuary there for tigers and other big cats after they, I guess, ostensibly retired from TV and film work and other performance efforts, etc. But long, complicated story. The short version is that the facility itself, and certainly the animals, were greatly neglected. And this guy now is up on serious criminal charges, and I think the trial actually starts in a few days' time. But meanwhile, most of those animals are still there and need to be looked after and cared for. So an amazing man named Chuck Tracy has left his own animal facility called the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center in Ramona, California, down by San Diego, and stepped up in every sense of the term to run the day-to-day operation of Tiger Rescue until these animals can be relocated. So he's doing so with the help of an ongoing rotating battalion of volunteers, and I guess I mentioned this for various reasons, but primarily to see if we might interest you in joining him one day. It's a really amazing, cool experience. You go out and basically you help clean their enclosures, water down the tigers, clean out their water tanks, etc., feed them, and otherwise make sure they've got what they need and that they're as comfortable as possible. There's other animals too, as well, and it's a really cool, amazing experience, really fulfilling. Couldn't recommend it more highly. So if you think you could spare a weekend day or even a weekday, so much the better. Obviously, they have a little tougher time getting people on weekdays. Please email us at talkinganimals@aol.com, and we will hook you up with the people who coordinate that. Along those lines, those animals will be relocated. Many actual proper sanctuaries have agreed to take them, but in most cases don't yet have the enclosures to house the tigers. So along those lines, if you could reach in your pocket, if you have a few bucks left after the holidays, to make a donation to help these tigers and other big cats, the best way to do that would be to send a donation marked Save the Tigers and send it to the Fund for Animals. Attention, Save the Tigers, 200 West 57th Street, New York, New York, 10019. And again, be sure to mark the envelope and or the check, Save the Tigers. And that'll help with the cost of the enclosures. And once they can get that together, then we'll be able to start relocating these big cats and make them squared away in new great homes. Closer to home, actually, and it's still timely enough, I think, there's some very cool calendars that the Fund for Animals folks, actually coordinated by Chuck Tracy, who I mentioned earlier, and his wife, have put together, and it features pictures of animals from their facility, the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center, but also a lot of tigers and other big cats from Tiger Rescue. $10 takes it away. Beautiful, beautiful calendars. I bought a bunch and gave them as gifts for Christmas. People seem to be really thrilled with them. So $10 not only covers the calendar, but the postage, the whole nine yards. So if you're interested in that, send that to Cindy Tracy, T-R-A-I-S-I, the Fund for Animals Wildlife Center, 18740 Highland Valley Road, Ramona, California, 92065. Again, can double-check that if I spoke too fast or you want to get the address. You can call us 949-824-5824 or email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. More locally, an interesting sort of story has developed, and that there is a little dispute brewing in Newport Beach, basically about a law, or at least a new sign enforcing the law, for $100 to $500 fines for owners of horses who leave a mess on their trails. And the horse people say it's not really right or safe to stop and clean up the mess with a big horse. And the people who aren't horse people say you got to do it. It's just a larger version of cleaning up after your dog. And become quite a controversy. So, your thoughts, your comments. Do you clean up after a horse? Do you not? Do you come back later? What do you do? And what people should do? I don't know if this issue pertains to you at all. Other places may have similar problems, similar conflicts. 949-824-5824 if you'd like to weigh in on that. Also, another piece of sort of sad news in the animal world is that yet another another bear expert was killed in the wild recently. Let's read a bit of this from the LA Times over the weekend. Vitaly Nikolayenko, one of Russia's best-known bear researchers and a man who spent 25 years living with the enormous brown bears of the wild Kamchatka Peninsula, has been found dead in an apparent bear mauling, authorities said. His body was on the at this remote area by this lake, and a 6.5-inch paw print of a medium-sized male was found next, along with an empty can of pepper spray, with which this guy had apparently tried to defend himself. So he'd been out there for a long, long time, and this just comes, of course, right on the heels of, sadly, another bear researcher of note, Timothy Treadwell, who he and his girlfriend were killed recently by a bear in Alaska's Katmai National Park. So, sorry to hear about that, definitely, and, you know, it's a complicated thing when you step into the world of wild animals, and, again, any thoughts or comments you'd like to share on that, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Have time for another couple things. One we want to do, a feature we introduced a few weeks back, is our quick, instant, true-false quiz. One question, you tell me if it's true or false, the first person to call in gets a prize. And because this will sort of tie in to our interview with Barbara Davis coming up shortly, here's this question. True, false. The chimpanzee is the only animal, besides the human, that actually recognizes its own face in a mirror. True or false? 949-824-5824. First person to call in, the correct answer gets a prize. That's right, gets a prize. All right, well, I don't know what all really to say on crocodile hunter Steve Irwin's latest stunt. Basically, as you probably know, you may not have heard, but he's basically hand-feeding a large crocodile while holding his infant son. And this was at a reptile park, his reptile park, I believe, actually, in Birrawa, north of Brisbane. And cradled his month-old son, Robert, under one arm and dangled a piece of chicken from the other hand, in front of a 13-foot crocodile. I guess it goes without saying, the croc quickly snapped up the meat. And anyway, this was captured by various news TV channels, and a lot of people have expressed their outrage. Of course, Irwin actually defended his actions, saying the tot was never in danger. I was in complete control of the crocodile. Robert was tucked right in my arms, said Irwin. I guess, moreover, his American wife, Terry, who handed the baby over to Irwin in the enclosure, and giggled at the spectacle agreed. It was a wonderful sensory experience for him, meaning the baby. He dug it, she said. Okay, your thoughts or comments on that? Not even sure what the best comment might be for that. But anyway, going to wrap things up here on this week's edition of the Animal News. But one last quick announcement for those especially down in the San Diego area. Today, the San Diego Animal Advocates and Last Chance for Animals will be hosting a news conference at Salk Institute in La Jolla at 11:30 a.m. and regarding an inside tip received by San Diego Animal Advocates concerning animal care at Salk. So you might want to check that out. Look forward to reporting next week on what the announcement was. But if you're in that area and you want to go down, you might want to check that out. And that's it. Other than, just quickly, I want to remind people that the Animal Rescue Site is a website that basically if you go, you can free up money to help pay for and therefore provide food and care for animals, various animal rescue sites. So it's www.theanimalrescuesite.com. And as far as I know, at least, it's been really sort of a cool thing, and basically it's just that advertisers and sponsors, you know, in exchange for the exposure that going to those sites and the advertising provides, give money to these animal operations. So if there's a catch, if there's something we haven't caught that's a downside, by all means, let us know, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And, but meanwhile, we want to move on to our guest today. I'm going to skip around a little bit here. So before we proceed, though, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed in Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCR, the University of California Board of Regents. And momentarily, we will be joined by today's guest on Talking Animals, Arthur Barbara Davis. But while we get her on the phone with us here, let's hear something. It's an ideal time for a tune, perhaps an apt selection. This is Kid Creole and the Coconuts with In the Jungle, KUCI. We'll be right back. That was Kid Creole and the Coconuts with In the Jungle. And earlier in the show, I mentioned that this week's guest is Barbara Davis, author of Dark Side of Debonair, The Bushmeat Trade, a novel that aims to call attention to the bushmeat crisis, an issue of particular interest to here at Talking Animals. So let's jump right in and welcome Barbara Davis to Talk Animals. Hi, Barbara, you there?
Hi, I am.
Oh, good, good. Looks like we can hear you loud and clear. That's great. Thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's just jump in because it's a pretty, intricate, complicated subject, and we only have so much time. So I guess just to start off with some basics, when and how did you sort of first become aware of the bushmeat problem?
Oh, you know what? It was by accident, and I always think it sort of found me. I ran across the word bushmeat about 3 years ago when I was surfing the internet, and I started reading about it and learning about the primates and other endangered animals being hunted for human consumption. And I read that Jane Goodall believed in 10 to 15 years we'd have no primates left in the wild, and then Zoo Atlanta had done a survey concluding 90% of Americans didn't know about it, and I fell into that category. And I didn't understand why, because I read National Geographic and I watch the Discovery Channels, and I wasn't getting the message, and I sort of feel like it hits me.
And you sort of touched on it, I guess, at least indirectly, but just so we have a decent understanding to jump off from here, what kind of, at least succinctly as possible for the moment, what is bushmeat?
Well, bushmeat is the meat of wild animals, any wild animal, from the rabbit in your backyard to elephant in Africa to a tiger in India. Any wild animal is considered bushmeat. A non-domesticated wild animal, or non-domesticated raised animal would be a wild animal, so it'd be bushmeat. So it's an old term meaning the meat from the bush, or the meat from the animal of the bush.
Okay. And how long has the bushmeat crisis existed, would you say?
The bushmeat crisis has really been around for about 10, 15 years, but it's really started to pick up momentum and notice over the last 4 to 5 years. We're really starting to see a major decline in the animal population, and we're starting to see that this meat is going international. It's leaving the boundaries of its native countries and showing up in restaurants through Europe and even here in the United States.
And I want to get to that in a moment, but, okay. But first, just what countries would you say it's most prevalent at the moment?
Well, the bushmeat industry is very heavily recognized in Central and Western Africa.
Mm-hmm.
It's also happening in Asia, in India, in South America, and we even have a form of it here in the United States.
Wow. And to what extent are the governments of those countries complicit or at least looking the other way?
Quite a bit. Most of these governments are turning a blind eye to the problem because they're serving the meat at their own banquets.
Oh,
for
wow.
them, it's sort of a delicatessen. It's something new. A delicacy, I should say. A delicacy. It's something new, and they feel that the forest is a renewable resource, and they've never had a problem with not having it, and they're not realizing how much meat is leaving the country.
And so who eats it exactly, and why? I mean, is it like expensive, or is it a delicacy? Is that what the appeal is?
It is expensive. It is a delicacy, and it's showing up in the markets through Africa. And well, we'll use Africa because that's my primary focus of my study. But it's showing up in the markets there, selling at 3 and 4 times the cost of beef and pork. So it's being sold to the upper middle classes. And this meat is being smuggled out of Africa. And it's showing up in restaurants throughout Europe and in trendy little food shops and in African-type markets.
And I'm sure this is a question I'll quickly regret, but what's an example of a bushmeat, like, dish or entree? I mean, I'm sort of frightened again for the answer, but just to get a better sense of what this means.
Meat from primates, from a gorilla, from a chimpanzee, little slivers of arms, you know, they're diced up and served in soup.
Yeah.
They're cooked in just any way you would cook any type of beef or poultry product.
Well, sure enough, I did regret asking that, at least the answer. But what are the implications of the bushmeat crisis? I mean, it sounds like they're pretty broad and global in all kinds of ways.
There are, and with primates, in particular, well, all wild animals, they carry diseases that can jump to humans. And when you look at chimpanzees, they carry malaria, they carry Ebola, and they're believed to be the carriers of the SIV virus, which is the grandfather to AIDS. And what's interesting is wild chimps don't get sick. They don't develop AIDS-type symptoms, but captive chimps can. And some scientists believe that there may be something growing in the forest that the chimps are eating that's preventing them from developing AIDS.
Wow. So this is actually curtailing some of those research avenues then, among other...
Yes. If we're losing the forest to the timber industry and the animals are losing their habitat to the timber industry and to other companies such as mining and that sort of thing, you know, we could be not only losing a natural cure for AIDS, but, you know, we're going to be opening the gate wider for more diseases to jump to humans. I mean, think of SARS just recently.
Yeah.
Who knew that was coming? You know, so you have to wonder what other diseases these animals are carrying that are going to jump to our human race.
Wow. And Barbara, is there, I think you kind of made a reference to this, but this I'd like to sort of get into a bit more. Is there evidence of bushmeat making its way into America? And if so, where?
Oh, absolutely. They are finding this meat at Logan Airport in London, Boston, and JFK in New York. They found some at, Atlanta's airport.
So you mean like smuggled in through luggage or trunks or cases or whatever?
Uh-huh. The rotten smell of the fresh meat, because it's rotting in the cargoes of the planes, is coming in suitcases. Mm. Or the smoke, the strong smell of the smoked meat, that's drawing some people's attention and they're starting to notice it. But we have a ring here in the United States. They just closed one down November of 2002 here in my home state of Missouri, where they were canning tigers and mislabeling the meat as lion so that it could legally be sold to restaurants.
Oh, my God.
So there are forms of it here in the United States. I think a year prior to that, in 2001, they closed down a ring around Chicago. So they are starting to watch it, and they are starting to see that it is here happening here in the United States.
Wow. That's scary. I mean, that's really wild, because I'm sure with what they're finding at those airports that you referred to, it's got to be only a small percentage of what's actually coming through.
Oh, yeah. Heathrow Airport estimates that nearly 4 million metric tons, which is equivalent to 100,000 cattle of bushmeat, goes through their airport every year.
Wow.
And I think Ireland is reporting nearly 1,000 pounds of it a month that they estimate that they're not finding, or that, you know, in conjunction with what they're finding.
Holy cow. First of all, let me just say again, we're speaking with Barbara Davis, author of Dark Side of Debonair, The Bushmeat Trade, here on KUCI. If you're listening, have any questions for Barbara, it's 949-824-5824. And let's continue, Barbara. Do the animals that are killed for the bushmeat tend to be adults, babies, both?
It's the larger animals. It's the adults.
Okay.
The hunters are given certain number of shotgun shells to use, and they want to get as much weight or meat or bang for their buck as they can per shell.
Mm-hmm.
So they go after the larger animals first.
I see.
Talking in the primates, it's the mothers and the fathers and the larger ones. And then the babies are left over, and they're often captured alive, the baby gorillas and chimpanzees, and they're brought into the market where they can be sold as pets or as entertainment to a bar or to a zoo or to a laboratory.
Mm.
And
wow.
As pets, they just don't make good pets. A young chimpanzee, coming an adult 3 or 4 year old chimpanzee, will have the mentality of a 2 year old child and the strength of 5 or 6 human males.
Oh, geez.
So they become too unruly for pets, and they often end up being sold back to the bushmeat market. If they're lucky, they end up in a sanctuary somewhere. It's the orphan industry is a whole separate secondary industry to the bushmeat black market.
Yeah, no, it sounds like this has now multiple dimensions of awful repercussions. So I guess this all kind of leads me to ask, what prompted you to tackle addressing the bushmeat situation by writing a novel versus, you know, another approach that might be, you know, nonfiction, more direct?
Well, you know what? There's a lot of organizations out there working toward the bushmeat black market, and I wasn't getting the message. Again, I watch National Geographic, and I read their magazines, I watch the Discovery Channel, and I didn't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, many Americans don't know about it, but I do read action-adventure, romantic-type mystery thriller books.
Okay.
And I wanted to use the different aspects of the bushmeat black market as a way to reach those people who are like myself and don't have access to scientific theses and are not getting the message from the animal conservation groups.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole purpose of my book as a novel was just to bring awareness, to get the word out there and let people know that this is happening, and hopefully spur some interest in wanting to learn more.
I see. And would you say that the bushmeat crisis and sort of the attendant issues are a major prominent part of the novel, or
I feel that I've used it as a background.
Mm-hmm.
I've used the different aspects of it to bring the characters together.
Yeah.
It is a romantic action adventure. It is sex and violence, but it does have a big dose of reality. And in the back of the book, I did put an overview of the Bushmeat black market, and I'm hoping just to get the word out there and give people the feel of what's happening. And I think the very first chapter, a lot of people have trouble getting through that because it's very graphic of a hunting scene with the chimps.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And yeah, and I wanted to get the feel of it, but I didn't want it to be a scientific thesis.
Right.
I wanted it to be an entertaining read.
Yeah, no, I really thought that it was kind of a, you know, sort of a soft touch in that way, and sort of it seemed to me that your idea was to kind of just bring people in as much as possible and expose them, rather than, you know, some things that might be a bit more direct but also might be more shrill or off-putting and sort of almost self-defeating in that way. So
yeah, thank you.
And what is your writing background, Barbara?
Oh, zero. Before this book, I had written a few poems for friends, a little bit of that. No professional training. I am a drafter by trade.
Drafter.
I have houses on the side for fun and gallop horses, but I'm just a creative person. I've always been interested in art and painting and sculpting, and my mind works very well in the 3D world. And so I really have no literary training at all. The book came to me in a dream. I asked for some way to help, to bring awareness, and I dreamt this storyline, and I just followed my dream, and I just started writing. And as I got stuck, I found people who could help me. I found good editors and who believed in my project and who were willing to help and to provide information for me.
So this is really your first writing effort then, to speak of. Wow. That's great. And and how much time have you spent in Africa?
Not a lot. I took a vacation there for a month back in 92, and
mm-hmm.
that was in Kenya, and that's why I set my story in Western Kenya, Eastern Uganda, even though the bushmeat industry is more central and Western Africa.
Right.
But I've been wanting to go back, and ever since I have been to Africa, I continued to study it and to read about it and to learn whatever I can about it, and, you know, I need to get back over there.
Sure. And given that expertise, both from visiting there and then obviously all your intensive study, why do you think the bushmeat problem has not received greater media exposure, mainstream media exposure in particular?
Well, you know, it has been presented to the mega media television news shows, and the mega media news shows turned it down and said, it's too gruesome, it's too big, we can't show it in the 45 minutes that we have. And we're not sure the American public will really want to, you know, can deal with it and comprehend it. And I think maybe part of it had a lot to do with the 80s. The ivory crisis was really put on the news every day, and they've kind of moved on to other things. And I'm hoping that my novel will help bring awareness to that mega media as well. And there are some other people who are working. There's a nonfiction book by Dale Peterson called Eating Apes. His book was just released in June of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they're working very delicately trying to get back into the media attention. They have never stopped trying to get it there. And you're starting to see more and more of it. CBS News is doing some things. NBC has done a few things. Every once in a while, you catch these shows on TV talking about it, but not to the great extent that I believe it needs to be seen.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, in doing research to speak with you today, I mean, I was really kind of shocked how little there really was. There was a CBS thing, the thing you were referring to, that seemed like a, you know, very fairly high profile piece, you know, on the evening news with Dan Rather or somebody, and a few other things like that. But you know, and then some things here and there in print. But wow, it just really seems like so far it has not really been focused on at all.
That's right. And if you look at the dates, if you do a search the internet and you look at the dates of those articles, they've all been within the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I started writing my book, I guess it's been 4 years now, when I first started writing, there was, when I did a surf on the internet, there was maybe 2 pages of listings.
Yeah.
And now there's maybe 30 or 60.
Yeah.
And it's starting to get some momentum. It's starting to get some attention. People are starting to pay attention.
Well, that's got to be very very encouraging. And who along those lines, because obviously this is all part of a fairly concerted effort, who would you say are some of the key figures or conservation groups kind of out in front of this issue at this point?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question, Duncan. There's an organization called the Bushmeat Crisis Task Force, and they are speared up by different people from the World Wildlife Fund, from the Jane Goodall Institution, from the American Zoo Association. There's about 30 different organizations that have gathered together to form this task force to study the bushmeat black market.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of these organizations in its own right has a bushmeat crisis committee working toward it. So there's they all have it. You can go to your local zoo, and I encourage everybody, go to your local zoo and talk to them and find out what they're doing and what their role is and how can you help and support them. But JGI, Jane Goodall Institute, has a new program called Roots and Shoots, and she's using that to educate kids about the importance of a balanced forest and the animals and the roles that they play. The Bushmeat Crisis Task Force is working with the NGOs and the timber industries and a few of the other companies trying to find alternative methods for them to use besides hunting the animals to feed the employees.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of organizations out there and they're all doing different things.
Wow. Well, so it sounds like we're definitely heading in the right direction. As you say, it sounds like it's really kind of snowballing in terms of getting the word out. And like you say, just by way of seeing the kind of coverage it's gotten in the last couple of years versus prior to that. So so we're on the right track. Any sort of, we're just kind of at the end of our time here, Barbara, but any sort of final thought or parting shot on the bushmeat crisis or anything else that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, talk to everybody you know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Go to your local zoo. See what you can do to help. If this is of an interest to you, if there's something that you think you can do to help, you can contact me directly. You can go to my website, redbarnpress.com or bushmeatcrisis.com. There are links there to JGI, Jane Goodall Institute, and the Bushmeat Crisis Task Force and a few others. If you want some more information, you can go there to find it. Do a search on the internet, see what you can find, and get people talking about it. If you know somebody in the media, ask them to do a little investigative story about it, because it may be happening in your backyard and you just don't know about it.
Well, that's great, Barbara. And also one other site that I think is probably worth mentioning, too, is bushmeat.org.
Yes.
Which I seem to find some really cool, valuable information on. So, Barbara, thank you so much. This is Barbara Davis, author of Dark Side of Debonair, The Bushmeat Trade. Again, her website is www.redbarnpress.com. Also, another site is bushmeatcrisis.com. And then just generally, if you want to check out more, it's bushmeat.org. And just any search will take you to all kinds of good info. So, Barbara, we want to thank you for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Thanks for having me.
I really enjoyed the book, and I hope you'll keep up the good work. And I know somewhere later in this year we'll have an audio version available of Dark Side of Debonair, so we look forward to that as well.
That's right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Barbara. We'll talk to you soon, I hope. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. All right, that was Barbara Davis, again, author of Dark Side of Debonair, and her website's redbarnpress.com. Alternative site for more information on the Bushmeat Crisis is indeed thebushmeatcrisis.com. And other ways to explore more is by visiting bushmeat.org. So I'm Duncan Strauss. It's Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. And we're going to sort of flip things around as we already have. Want to step now into the Comedy Corner, something we typically do earlier in the show, but we wanted to get Barbara on her time because she's actually in the studio there starting to record her audiobooks. We don't want to keep her waiting. But we want to go, as always, with a piece of animal-oriented stand-up. It's vintage material from Bill Cosby with the story of the chicken, KUCI.
I was thinking the other day, which is really groovy. You have to do that every once in a while. You have to think. You know, just lay up in your bed and just think. When you don't have anything to do, you just think. And I started thinking about animals, because to me they're really groovy because they don't talk or nothing. So I try to get into their brains to see what they're thinking. And I started thinking about the first chicken. Did you ever think about the first chicken? Not who came first, the chicken or the egg, because I really don't care. Because if there was an egg and the chicken came from it, who did the chicken have to learn from? Because when you think about chickens, they don't hang out with other birds. They hang out with the horse. You know, they walk around. How you doing, horse? How's everything? And they walk around with the cow. Hey, cow, what's happening? How you doing? You know. And they ain't hanging out with the ducks or the robins or nobody like that. Robin Redbreast. Names you learn in elementary school. Robin Redbreast. They're just hanging out with themselves. So I figure the first chicken had to be confused. You know what I mean? Because now, when they were first here, everybody got irked or pregnant. They were all swollen with child. So the chicken's hanging out with the horse and the cow, and they're all irked. And they're just proud, can't wait. The chicken's saying, oh, yeah, yeah, it's going to really be nice, don't you think? All of a sudden, the horse said, and there it was, a colt, you dig? And the colt is standing up, skinny legged and everything. And you dig? And the chicken was really happy. But it said, oh, isn't that cute? It looks just like you. That is, it's just, oh, it's so, so happy for you. And the cow said, and there's a calf. And the calf. Chicken said, oh, man, it looks just like got a little bit of the father there. Yes, black and white spots. And oh, it's just got, oh, mine is coming now. And they all look and. The chicken had to be confused. Look at an egg. And there was no name for it then. She just looked at it. Oh, my. And the rooster probably was worse than the old girl.
What were you drinking last night?
So I figure out of embarrassment, she sat on it and tried to hide it, you dig? And felt it cracking. But you got to do some thinking, because the chicken had to be confused. The duck probably came over and explained it to her, because ducks are hip.
That was, of course, Bill Cosby with the story of the chicken. Taken from the CD, The Best of Bill Cosby, The Comedy Corner is a signature feature of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM. As you know, we also stream live on the internet at www.kuci.org. Hopefully some of you are listening through that very means. And beyond that, it's a really cool site. It's got a schedule of all the programming tracks each day, sort of program by program. And then also offers the whole schedule for the week if you want to check it out that way. Look for your favorite shows and programs. There's also CD reviews, a list of upcoming bands playing live on the station, special guests appearing on the talk show and public affair programs, and other elements. That's KUCI.org. And while we're talking about nifty websites, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention ours, which is TalkingAnimals.net. So we hope you'll go there and sign up for the email list. We can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of the shows, sort of photographs and articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces and more. So please stop by and take a look. It's www.talkinganimals.net. Time now to jump into another regular feature here of Talking Animals. It's Name That Animal Tune. And, of course, remarkably like any version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except that in this game, the tunes are always animal-related. Usually just by virtue of one or more animals being part of the song title, but occasionally it's a bit more indirect than that. And either way, like most renditions of this game, we can only provide a brief snippet of the tune in question for a number of reasons. Not least that while, of course, the game hinges on a song being somewhat recognizable, we also don't want to stray too far for too long from the KUCI music policy. So with that preamble behind us, but also noting there's always a prize. That's right, folks. He did say prize. For the first caller who correctly identifies the song and artist, so as soon as you recognize this animal tune, please call us at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Okay, let's get started. Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals on KUCI.
He's crawling up my wall. Now he's up above my head, hanging by a little thread.
Anyone? All right, because we get to the chorus, there's going to be the title. I don't know if we want to make it that easy, do we? Now let's play a bit more. What the heck? All right, if you're listening there, you got the answer. 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Meanwhile, it's time to jump right into one more animal song, at least, before we close out today's show. And this is from a guy and a CD that we've featured a few times over the last several months. This is Kirk Olson from his cool CD, Dog Songs, which, indeed, truth in advertising, it's all songs about dogs. This one's called If My Dog Could Talk, here on KUCI.
If my dog could talk, I think I know what he'd say. He'd say, put down that guitar, let's go out and play. Around the corner, there's a girl named Cosette. Well, she's the prettiest dog I've ever met. She's not too big, but man, she's real tough. When people walk by, she shows them her stuff. She barks at their heels and they run away quick. Will you get my leash, I'll get my stick. The sun is out and it's too nice for us to be in here. I've got a dog I've got to see, so get off your butt. I've got squirrels to chase, and who knows what else he'd say. My dog would talk. Oh, if my dog could talk, I think he'd say a bunch about the steak he wants for breakfast, dinner, and lunch. The only thing he likes as much as chowing down is getting outside and running round. The sun is out and it's too nice for us to be in here. I've got a dog I've got to see, so get off your butt. I've got squirrels to chase, and who knows what else he'd say. My dog would talk. Oh, if my dog could talk, I'd get him on the TV, so he could talk to the world. The world would see that he's so great they'd offer him a show. But if my dog could talk, he'd say no. The sun is out and it's too nice for us to be in here. I've got a dog I've got to see, so get off of your butt. I've got a squirrel with my name on it, and who knows what else he'd say. My dog could talk. If my dog could talk. If my dog could talk.
All right, that's Kirk Olson with If My Dog Could Talk from Dog Songs. Let's find out more about Kirk on this cool CD, www.dogsongs.net. And I'm Duncan Strauss. We've just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, the UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. I want to thank again our guest, Barbara Davis. Her book is Dark Side of Debonair, The Bushmeat Trade. And again, her websites include redbarnpress.com, bushmeatcrisis.com, and I otherwise also recommend bushmeat.org for finding out more about the whole bushmeat problem and just what we can do about it. I also want to thank you all for listening and hope you'll join us next Monday on Talking Animals, when we'll feature a fascinating, if as yet unbooked, guest from some province of the animal world. So again, please join us next Monday, January 12th on Talking Animals. By the way, other great public affairs shows on KUCI include just today alone. Typically, the Serena Sharp Show, which of course normally precedes Talking Animals. At 5 p.m., we offer Counterspin, the wonderful syndicated feature. Followed at 5:30 by Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan. And that's just Monday. There's great public affairs program like that virtually each weekday here on KCI, usually 8 to 9 a.m. and 9 to 10 a.m. in the morning, then again from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. And again, I want to urge you to check out our nifty website. It's talkinganimals.net. And please, when you get there, sign up for our email list so we can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. Also, I encourage you to email me with any comments you might have, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, animal songs, animal comedy bits, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott, and the blues disease. As always, we're going to close things out with an animal-oriented tune. This is Midnight Oil with a song called Bull Roar. Again, we urge you to catch the blues disease, which will be infecting you momentarily. This is 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks for listening. Be kind to animals, be kind to others, and be kind to yourself. And we'll catch you next week on Talking Animals.
The father breaking of the rain. The temperature in the shade had reached 110 again. In the desert, in the dry, on the overland.